You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 64, You Whip the Captain First. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including The Next Generation Season 2 on Blu-ray, Walter Koenig's Star Celebration, Hands-On with Star Trek Catan, Google's Trek Doodle, the best t-shirt ever made, and we'll follow the title of the next movie, Into Darkness. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt and Drew Stewart to discuss the Gamesters of Triskelion. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm exhausted because I spent Saturday chasing zombies with Nerf guns. Not only shooting them with Nerf guns, but shooting them with my camera as well, because it was for a web series I'm doing with Sci-Fi Commons. So, whew.
I saw the photos that you tweeted and posted to Instagram of that, and I noticed that you got a little bit of your fan base kind of excited, too, there.
I did. moving on. It's actually amazing how much cell reception you can get during the zombie apocalypse. We were supposed to be, you know, in character as embedded reporters, because everyone on the site was, you know, in character for the whole thing, or at least supposed to be. But here I am sitting on Instagram and uploading pictures of myself with holding a Nerf gun. Oh, well.
That's what everyone will be doing during the zombie apocalypse, apparently, because I notice, and I'm guilty myself, and I walk around Tokyo. Mm. Everybody is like this,
yeah,
into their phone screen these days,
staring into their TARDIS.
I mean, the zombie apocalypse could happen, and no one would even notice.
Absolutely, that was an awful lot of fun. Another thing I did this week was play the Star Trek Catan game again with Sci-Fi Commons, who seems to be taking up an awful lot of my time, and Sentil from Twitter. That, Chris, I cannot wait to play that with you guys at Star Trek Las Vegas. It is an awful lot of... Catan already is an awful lot of fun, and adding the Star Trek element to it is just really phenomenal.
Yeah, it looks fun, all the photos. Now, if I'm correct, Vulcan did defeat the Federation during your game, is that right?
It did. After a long, like, 2 hours in the McDonald's, eventually Vulcan did... emerge victorious. It was a really close game, though. It came down to, you have to reach 10 victory points. And for the last 15, 20 minutes, all of us had exactly 9 and just couldn't find a way to get that last one until Sci-Fi Commons finally, I forget what he did. I think he just was able to build one more base and boom, that was it.
Oh, I thought he bought the Happy Meal, which came with the additional star base that allowed you to finally overpower the enemy.
Oh, that would have been.
Now, did I hear that you guys attracted like a whole gaggle of high school students to your game?
This is true. Now I live across from the high school down here in Kent. And yeah, a football game got out during our game. So the McDonald's went from being the sleepy little, you know, nothing going on to being full to the brim of teenagers. You know, some of them in cheerleading outfits, some of them in, you know, full football uniform, and then spectators. So they basically just start filling it up, and it's, you know, some of them spill over into our area, and they just start, you know, staring. You know, what are you guys doing? Because it's, you know, it's obviously a board game, but it's not, you know, Monopoly. So,
right. Because I was going to say, you know, when high school students get out of the football game and the football team and the cheerleaders and all come over, you know, exactly what they're expecting to see is a table full of grown men playing a Star Trek board game.
Exactly.
On a Friday night in a McDonald's.
Precisely. I think the key is to just be completely, you know, don't be ashamed about it. Just say, yes, we are playing Star Trek Catan. And what is that? That is a board game for nerds. And they were taking pictures of us. They said we're going to end up on Facebook. Goodness. But none of them seemed to be laughing at us. But then that's the way I felt when I was in high school. And I think they were laughing at me then too.
All right. Well, it sounds interesting. So I'm looking forward to Star Trek Las Vegas when we all can, you know, get a glass of rum, sit down and play Star Trek Catan.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, one thing that we are going to do, Greg, we've got a bunch of like just little items here that we need to promote to start the show. And again, since you get to record the show at night, you know, you can get your alcoholic beverage of choice and relax next Saturday night when we join our friends from Trekmate for the 24-hour pod till you drop podathon extravaganza that's going to be taking place.
Oh, it's going to be phenomenal. Yeah, I'm gonna load up. Because usually, you know, for this show, I might drink a little bit of alcohol, but not too much. Because, you know, I really want to keep up the quality of the podcasting here at Trek FM. You know, if we're going to have people like, you know, RDM tweeting about us, I can't just be, rah! But for Trekmate, for the kids, I'll be going all out. Expect me to have rum, gin, whiskey, scotch whiskey, you know, Romulan ale, pretty much anything I can get my hands on.
I hope that's some vintage Argyle gin you're going to have there.
Of course, from only the finest Jeffrey's Tube distilleries.
I love the label on that. That actually has the Jeffrey's Tube on the label.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is taking place next weekend. We talked about it on the show last week. They're raising money for Amnesty International and for the Watford General Hospital's special care baby unit, which is a real thing. It's not a CBS primetime drama.
I think I saw special baby unit the other day.
They just call it, you know, SCBU. It comes on after CSI and NCIS.
And what's that show that Kate Mulgrew is on? SPCVI SUV or whatever.
Yes, that was the one. All right. So anyway, we're going to be helping Trekmate raise money for this cause along with many other podcasters. And our time slot is going to be, and I may be slightly confused because of daylight saving time here. So please check the Trekmate website at trekmate.org.uk to get the final details. But we're slotted in for 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. GMT.
So just prime time real estate, basically.
Prime time, that's right.
Yeah.
So that's going to be Saturday evening for you, Greg. It's going to be Sunday morning for me. And we're not sure exactly what we're going to be talking about yet, other than we're really going to try to do that barrel roll workshop that we talked about.
Absolutely.
All right. So everyone, again, for details, trekmate.org.uk, and you'll get the final information, all the guests' time slots, and how to actually listen to the live streaming.
And I'm sure once the actual time comes, we'll be tweeting about it like crazy. Just you know, click a link if you're up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Greg, you mentioned RDM, Robert
Yes.
Duncan McNeil. Now, we had a really cool thing happened, I guess, while I was asleep, mm-hmm. and I woke up and found it. RDM actually promoted Trek FM and Trek News and Views this morning.
He did. I mean, I saw him earlier, actually, a few days ago, tweeting that he was excited for this episode. And
oh,
now
wow.
Here he is putting an actual link in saying, here it is, fans, check out these fine ladies from Trek FM talking about me. I actually haven't had a chance to listen to the episode. It's sort of a tribute to Tom Paris, from my understanding.
Tribute is one word for it. as I was listening through it, as I was doing the final, you know, Colin does the editing. Maybe Charlene did the editing for this one usually, but I always do the very final stage of Trek News and Views and actually get it up on the site. And as I was listening through and writing the description for the show, I think I called it a global love fest for Robert Duncan McNeil and Tom Paris. I have to say that, you know, Anna, Kate, Lori, Charlene, I just have this sneaking suspicion that these women really, really like Tom Paris and really, really like Robert Duncan McNeil.
Wow. So sort of like Empress Hoshi level. Did they pull out the fur coats and the whips and the ball gags?
Look, Charlene was hosting. Colin took the week off. Charlene was the showrunner. So what do you think?
Enough said.
So everyone, go listen to this show. It's trek.fm/TNV44. It's Trek News and Views 44. And you can hear all the love for RDM and Tom. And it's there.
And of course, I am putting together my own love fest for RDM. Of course, that's Ronald D. Moore. So if you want to join in on that, just give me a call and we'll set it up. It'll be 3 to 8 hours of whiskey drinking, smoking, and basically just talking about philosophy and the end of generations. So,
okay. Sounds great. And while we're at it, Greg, I also wanted to mention that MatterStream is going to be coming out by the time this Ready Room drops. I had a great conversation with Rod Roddenberry last Friday, my time. Of course, we're talking about the Mission Log podcast, but we also, in the middle, got into a really interesting discussion about all the different Star Trek series and how they each approached Gene's philosophy. And we talked about how we each view each series and which is closer to the philosophy and especially about Deep Space Nine as well and how that differed from the others.
Oh, very cool. I'll look forward to hearing this one then.
So that'll be out, should be out actually on Monday. The show will drop on Tuesday, and that will be at trek.fm/MS, just for MatterStream.
I don't know if you've been on StarTrek.com today, Chris, but they're running a poll on which other of the original Star Trek cast you'd like to see as a captain. And, you know, who's winning it right now is Spock. And obviously, these people have not listened to our last show and don't realize that you really, really don't want to put a Vulcan in command. Goodness. But okay, so that aside, exactly. Of course, I had to vote for Chekhov, Pavel Andreyevich, because I think he would just make a phenomenal captain. But he is sorely, sorely underrated. I clicked it, and he's got like 3% of the vote. Less than Uhura, less than, you know, Ensign Rand. Really, really low numbers for Chekhov.
I mean, I think even Lieutenant Kyle has more votes, right?
I'm pretty sure. You know, Porthos. I'm pretty sure they gave him more votes than they did Chekhov.
He's not even on the show.
He's not even from the correct time period.
Right.
And I was talking with Sci-Fi Commons about this. Chekhov is sorely underrated, and it's taken this long for Walter Koenig to actually get his star on the Walk of Fame. But so the big celebration was this weekend down in L.A.
It was, yeah. So we want to give a shout out to Walter Koenig. Just congratulations for finally getting that star. It's so nice to finally have the entire cast of the original series. And I don't know why it took so long for Walter Koenig to get the star, but he does have it now. So
yeah, I mean, it was star-studded. I mean, we've talked about it before. Go ahead and look it up. See what was happening. Really cool stuff. I wish I could have been there for it. Hopefully we can have, we'll have Larry on again soon, and we'll have to ask him about his personal experiences at the star event.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Greg, one thing we forgot to talk about last week is that moment. For me, it was late at night, I think. Maybe it was morning for you guys, but Charlene found the most perfect shirt ever created.
She did.
On the internet. And she told us about it. And I know this site must have been wondering what the hell was going on, because in a matter of like 1 minute, they received a flood of orders from
absolutely
everyone associated with Trek FM and our shows. And that is the Quick Brown Fox did a barrel roll over the Lazy Dog.
Which is perfect. All Charlene did was tweet a link, and I was on my way to work. I was on the bus. I was reading Twitter on my iPad, and I saw it, and I was already in the process of ordering it when I got an iMessage from you. I actually had already clicked the button to order it. I'd put in my credit card information, and yeah, and everyone else. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I know Char, you, and I did. I think 005 ordered one.
Everybody did.
Colin
ordered one.
Oh, man.
Tom ordered one. I mean, these shirts are now going all over the United States, coming here to Japan. We've got one going to England, going to Wales. I think there's one going to Ireland.
Yep.
They're like all over the place. Yeah. So,
And I know Charlene got hers Thursday or Friday. Mine got delivered yesterday. I've just not had a chance to pick it up. And yours is on a slow trip to China, from what I understand.
Right. Yeah, mine's on a slow boat to China because, you know, as everyone in the U.S. apparently thinks, Japan and China, you're pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
I've actually had people ask me, did you know how to speak Chinese before you moved to Japan?
And then you said, no, it's the language is Mandarin.
That's right. Get your facts straight.
Come on, people.
Chinese in Japan. Come on. Of course we speak Mandarin here.
Yes, hopefully we'll all have our barrel roll shirts on starting next week for the entire rest of the run of the Ready Room.
That's right, because it is now the official uniform of the Ready Room.
Aside from the Q mustache, we'll now have the barrel roll shirt, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Oh, just wait till we start having to wear those obedience collars.
Yeah. I...
Now, Greg, I woke up the other morning to something on Google that had you really excited. And I told you, I asked you, have you seen today's Google Doodle? And you were just, I've never seen you more thrilled than you were at that moment.
Oh, man. No, it was one of those things where, you know, the first time I saw a link, I was like, oh, cool, Google Doodle. Yes. Very cool. And then every other tweet on my timeline for the next 3 hours was, oh my God, guys, have you seen the Google Doodle? I think Patrick Stewart showed about 5 days later. I've been in Tel Aviv, but I saw this amazing Google Doodle, buddy, and you really must see it. And I just, oh goodness, too much, too much. No, but it was very cool. I mean, it was the 46th anniversary of Star Trek, the airing of The Man Trap, which is, of course, everyone's favorite episode of the original series. So it was good to see Google doing something really special for it.
I did enjoy it because they made it so interactive and they made it quite deep. And, you know, you could really play around with it.
I heard there was a tribble somewhere. If you clicked enough things, you got to a tribble.
Yeah, I think I missed some of the stuff, actually. But I was disappointed that Uhura did not give you hugs when you clicked. But
very, very true.
Of course, this was the prime timeline. So they were just, you know, staying close to canon. But it was cool. But yeah, I'm with you too. It's like, after I got up, my timeline was just flooded for hours with tweets about this Google Doodle. And but it's cool. I'm glad they did it. It was very cleverly done.
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay, Greg, one more quick thing here. I came across this website actually because we were followed by this person on Twitter the other day, and I thought, this is interesting. We were followed by someone called Star Trek Points. Now, of course, Star Trek makes a lot of very good points about society, about the human condition, and so forth. But, you know, Star Trek Points is actually a website. It's a collection of screen captures of people on Star Trek pointing at things. And I think it's just really brilliant.
Now, I thought this was all going to be just, you know, Captain Picard pointing when he says engage. But there's more stuff in there. I mean, the what I saw right on the front page was all from the Last Outpost. So you got Ferengi pointing at different things. You got Yar pointing at Riker, apparently. I didn't realize there were so many points in Star Trek.
I love when people do these things. Now, the picture you're talking about right now is the double point.
Yes, the double point.
Arms in the air, double point Ferengi. Oh, it's hilarious. I love it when people pull these out. It's like the video of Worf being rejected.
Where yes.
You don't realize how often Worf is rejected until someone pulls all the clips together and the running time of the video is 17 minutes. That's when you realize that, you know, this is really a problem for Mr. Worf.
Absolutely.
But I don't know. I love this site. We're going to put a link to this in the show notes. I just wanted to point it out to everyone.
Sorry. Yes, maybe you should visit it on your iDevice that you can point and tap to get there. It's pretty funny. I mean, it's one of those tumblers that you'll see and you'll tire of quickly, but it's really, really quite amusing.
It's very amusing. So the URL is StarTrekPointsAtThings.tumblr.com. So It's really funny. So just go and check that out. All right. So, Greg, speaking of the next generation, now it's time to really get into some discussion here. The official release date of the Season 2 Blu-ray set was announced recently. It's, you know, it's not new this week, but it's the past couple of weeks it's been announced. Cover art, big surprise, it looks just like the Season 1 cover art, but it's gold, just like the original DVD releases were. But that's been announced and bonus features. So I know you want to talk a little bit about what you're looking forward to in Season 2.
Right. Well, I mean, Season 2 is famously the one with Pulaski. And I always thought of it as the bad one. Although during my recent rewatch, discovered Season 2 is not quite as bad as I remembered, especially compared to Season 1 and a lot of Season 3 and 4. Season 2 actually has several quality episodes, despite the fact that they were hampered by the 88 writer's strike. And yes, Dr. Pulaski is a little grating.
A little bit, you could say that. I haven't done a Season 2 rewatch in a while. I kind of need to because I have been influenced by Dork Trek that Crusher is a bad doctor and Pulaski is a good doctor. And I need to go back and actually do a Season 2 rewatch and see if I really truly do agree with this. I mention it all the time on Twitter, largely because I think it's amusing. But I need to find out if I really feel that way. I don't, regardless of her skill as a physician, I've seen Season 2 of The Next Generation so many times over the years that I'm skeptical that I'm going to be brought around to actually liking Diana Mulder or Pulaski. But I'm interested to see what my take is, you know, after all the influence that I've had recently.
Right. Well, I wanted to point out a couple of maybe my favorite episodes of Season 2 and my worst episodes. I want to hear this from you as well. So maybe we can start with our favorite episodes. If anybody's out there saying, Season 2, why do I care about Season 2? Season 2 has Elementary, Dear Data. We've got The Measure of the Man. And we've got Q-Who. I mean, just those. They may not be in the top 10, all of them, of TNG in general. But those are three really fantastic episodes. And to realize, wait, those are Season 2. Those aren't Season 4 or 5. They were already doing those early on. Really cool.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Q-Who is one of the episodes that I think really showed the potential that The Next Generation had. Because, of course, it introduced the Borg, which is great. But it also introduced that... it built upon, anyway, that great relationship between Picard and Guinan.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. It really showed what a great character Guinan was, largely because Whoopi Goldberg was playing Guinan. I don't know that Guinan would have been such a great character if someone else had been playing.
Probably true.
Playing her. But that was great. So most definitely Q-Who. And seeing the visuals of the Borg in the remastered is going to be fantastic.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
As well, of course, Elementary, Dear Data, great episode. I don't like all holodeck episodes. You know, every time they go in, you know, we could talk about in Voyager with Janeway's terrible taste in holodeck programs and the novels that she's interested in and all. It's like, but Elementary, Dear Data, really fantastic. And of course, The Measure of a Man, as you said, is one of the great. Plays of Star Trek,
which they're even they've got the extended version of A Measure of a Man in HD on this DVD, so or on this Blu-ray. So I don't know how long it's going to be, how much extra footage, but they're building in all of that for the director's cut.
I feel like I heard that there's something like 22 minutes or so of additional footage in that. I could be wrong about the exact time, but it's lengthy.
Yeah. It's really, really cool stuff. I mean, deleted scenes, extended scenes, all of that stuff that that we know from movies, getting director's cuts for movies, but we hardly ever go back and get a director's cut for a TV episode.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see. I have a feeling that it's going to be one of those things where you can definitely see why it was trimmed down.
Oh, sure.
But I think if you really like Star Trek for that dialogue, especially what's discussed in The Measure of a Man, It will probably be very interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, courtroom drama on Star Trek is not something I'm a huge fan of. The Drumhead, I really can't stand. And I know that a lot of people love that episode. But A Measure of a Man is a courtroom drama that I really do plug into. I think because it is about android rights, and I think that's one of the things that's, crazily enough, going to be important in the next 100 years. So it's great to see Star Trek tackling that in the 20th century.
Well, you can say you don't like courtroom drama, Greg, but you know, I've been stalking you on Get Glue, and when you played Rules of Engagement from DS9 five times in a row the other day.
Oh, man.
Don't tell me you don't like that stuff.
Oh, man. Anytime the admirals show up on DS9, I pull up my iPad, I start being like, I'm just going to look through the entire Trek FM account timeline for a little while. I know it's going to take me a while, but so is this episode.
Yeah, they're rolling out the admirals, clearing out the wardrobe.
Right. All right.
Well, let's not forget, in season two, one of the all-time great Next Generation episodes, one of my favorite episodes, bad episodes that you love, is The Royale.
Oh, yes. The Royale is going to be great to see in HD. It's a weird episode. It feels like an original series episode for sure.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
And I really can't find that much to hate about it. There's little bits that you know, could complain about, but really, no, it is an awful lot of fun if you approach it from the perspective of, this is just a fun original series concept.
Right. Don't go into it wanting to see Measure of a Man again.
Right.
Just go into it and have fun, because I don't know why, but I just really love that episode. So I really seriously am looking forward to that.
Yeah. Now, there are some pretty poor episodes in season two as well. I just want to list a couple of them. We've got Where Silence Has Lease, which, goodness, we can't even go there. The Schizoid Man, Pen Pals was another thing that I consider an absolute clunker. So you do have to work your way through season two, and remember that's not all gold. But when you've got Measure of a Man up there, it's hard to even compare anything to.
Well, it's not all gold, Greg. But remember, the Icarus Factor is in season two. And you know what that means, right?
Yoru Shig Gasig Bashimash.
That's right. We're going to get to see Ambo Jutsu in full spec, high definition.
I can't wait to see how much more kanji there is that's misdrawn or just upside down, just in random places all over the set.
I mean, I sent you an iMessage and I said that the Amazon price for the TNG season 2 Blu-ray is currently $90.99. Mm. And this price is going to have to come down.
Absolutely.
But maybe I take that back, because I forgot that the Icarus Factor is in season 2. And just to get that Ambo Jutsu match in HD might be worth, you know, the extra $30 for me.
Very true. And not only Icarus Factor and the extended Measure of a Man, there's also the extended version of Shades of Grey, which includes, actually, you know, sort of like Lost eventually started doing flash forwards. It's got flashes forward to seasons 3 through 7, as well as some of the future films that Riker gets to not really relive, but pre-live while on that bed.
It's one of the best bonus features coming on the disc. And surprise, I don't think you were supposed to say anything, Greg, because it's not listed.
Well, it's not
in the official announcement.
Yet. No. Right. But it will be announced coming soon, believe me.
Somewhere in a lonely hotel room is a guy starting to realize that his eternal fate has turned its back on him, and it's 2 a.m. Yeah, there's a storm on the loose, sirens in my head. I'm wrapped up in silence, all circuits are dead. I cannot decode, my whole life spins into a frenzy. Help, I'm stepping into the twilight zone. The place is a madhouse, feels like being cloned. My beacon's been moved under moon and star. Where will I let it go now that I've gone too far? Help, I'm stepping into the twilight.
Well, Greg, the news we've been waiting for a while has finally come out as we move into movie news and rumors. Mm-hmm. And it's not exactly the Twilight Zone, but apparently we're going to be trekking into darkness next spring.
Into darkness. Yeah, I was sort of tracking this news over the course of the day. We sort of got early word that maybe a title had been decided upon, and then I think Coming Soon announced that they had gotten word that the URL had been purchased for Star Trek Into Darkness movie.com and Star Trek Into Darkness.com. And we're hearing this that this is the title. It's still not officially announced, but it's Star Trek, no colon, so just Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yes, Star Trek Into Darkness. Now, what's very interesting is the plot of the story now, because as you just said, there is no colon. It's just Star Trek Into Darkness. And what I'm looking forward to is early in the movie is when the colon probe shows up to try to find out what's happened to the colon.
And of course, colons haven't been used since the 22nd century, and they have to go back in time. Oh, man.
Right. They have to probe for the colon. And I don't know. They want to know what happened to all the colons. Why did the colon go extinct?
Mm-hmm.
Why did Paramount choose not to bring a colon back and put it in his title?
Right. And I think, honestly, as much as I am looking forward to hearing and seeing the colon probe, I think the debate about the colon is a little silly. Sometimes a film has a colon, sometimes it doesn't. You know, Comedy Central actually made fun of it with one of their movies recently where the title had not only a colon, but the word colon in it. And I think once you've got a movie coming out that's parodying the concept of having a colon in the title, might be time just to move on. I did hear someone complaining that it was a sentence, Star Trek Into Darkness. And how can you have a movie title that's a sentence? Or it sounds silly. I don't know.
How do you feel? Because I don't know. If I read it, Star Trek Into Darkness, I'm fine. But I kind of feel like what they are going for is Star Trek Into Darkness.
I think they're going to be written on separate lines. We're going to have Star Trek in the regular Trek font. We're going to have the subtitle in a different typeface below it. You know, we had Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End was the third Pirates film. And that's a sentence, but no one thinks of it that way. You don't think of the pirates being at World's End. You just think of the title of this one is At World's End. So people will refer to this one as, you know, Into Darkness, STID, ID, something like that. I don't think, although actually I like the idea of it, DAR, if I can get that started. I like referring to these as three-letter acronyms. So I think this one is DAR for darkness. I think it really works for me. And I think it'll work for people better once we've got that title, that logo that people can look at rather than just being written out kind of boringly.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. But there was one tweet that I saw. Actually, someone, John Phelps on Twitter, replied to Drew and said, I keep reading it as Star, comma, Trek Into Darkness. Hmm. And I imagine Star as a badass 80s hero. Maybe I'll make that movie. So could you picture Cumberbatch is playing a badass 80s hero named Star? And he's trekking into darkness.
Oh man, I'd pay to see that. That would work for me. I don't know. Titles are always a thing. And people complained about the titles of the prequels of Star Wars. You know, The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones. Like, it's just the title. And honestly, those titles really work for me. I think this one works. It's not, you know, I want it to boldly go. This honestly feels kind of like To Boldly Go for me. It's kind of got that feeling of being pulled in, and I like that idea.
Yeah, I think as a title itself, Into Darkness works fine for me. I think it's one of those titles that after you see the movie, you're going to say, ah, yeah, I understand why they chose this title, and it's a great title for this movie.
Absolutely.
Going in, it doesn't really give you any indication as to, you know, what the movie's going to be about. And I think that's maybe why some people don't like it as well, that they were really hoping that the title was going to tell us Khan or Gary Mitchell or
right.
Glamour King. Or,
well, let's remember, you know, this is Into Darkness, which reminds me of the Dork Trek episode where they talked about the Area of Blackness. I'm wondering, is Cannonbotch playing Nigilum from Where Silence Has Lease?
He very well could be. Yeah, that is a good point. And maybe Tasha Yar is actually in this movie. It's Prime Tasha who came back through time, only she's not played by Denise Crosby.
Oh, really?
She's played by Chase Masterson.
Oh, I would love that, and Dork Trek would love that as well. Anytime Tasha Yar can show up, and anytime Chase Masterson can show up, I'm all on top of it.
You are all on top of it, aren't you?
not really. Oh, goodness. I don't know. So let's see. Are we giving the title a Trek FM thumbs up or a Trek FM thumbs down?
I'm going to give it a Trek FM thumbs up.
There we go. I think I agree as well. Yeah, it's
I have no problem with the title.
Good.
And I have no problem with the missing colon either. So.
Yeah. All right. Although when the colon probe shows up, you may regret those words.
I may.
Apart from the title, though, we've got some other stuff coming out from actors. Of course, we've always got actors talking in the media. And the first one is from Zach Quinto. And he's talking
about... Oh, you
mean
it's not Peggy this time?
I know. I think they've put Simon Pegg into a lockbox. And they're keeping him from talking to the press anymore because he was just... He wasn't helping, really. I know he was trying to. He was saying as much as he could to tamp down rumors, but I really think in the end, he was just not improving the situation. Amazingly, we're going to talk about Carl Urban. Carl Urban's not in a lockbox, but I think that's because he's Judge Dredd, and you just don't want to mess with Judge Dredd. So what is it that the new Spock had to say about this film, Chris?
Well, the new Spock says that it's bigger and bolder. And apparently he is talking about the movie itself. And he says that, I feel like, you know, my work is done on the movie right now. And until we have to go and promote it, I guess he means officially, right? Because,
I guess,
you know, they're all kind of promoting it all the time.
They are.
In their comments. My work remains done. And I let JJ and his incredible team of people get in there and do the work that they need to do now. I feel very fulfilled, but I don't feel particularly attached to what the outcome of that project will be, because I have faith in the people that I was collaborating with to make it as good as it can be. So,
okay, so he showed up, he did his job, and it sounds like now he's stepping back and he's just saying, look, they're going to make a great film out of that mess that we threw together on the soundstage a couple months ago. I think that's what I got out of it, right?
Well, I mean, last week, you know, we talked about how Chris Pine said that he decided to actually come to his job for this. Yeah,
exactly.
So, last
film, I just kind of phoned it in, and JJ kind of made a film out of it. I don't know. This time, I thought I'd kind of, you know, actually act and stuff. Yeah. No,
I don't know. I sometimes laugh at the comments that the actors make about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if they're being modest as creatives about their own work. They're trying to, you know, lower the expectations.
Right.
I'm not sure, but you get a lot of these comments. They're just like really basic comments, but of course the news sites will turn them into something huge.
Absolutely. And you know, on top of that, we've got Bigger and Bolder from Quinto, and then from Judge Dredd himself, we've got Relentless, Engaging, Action-Packed, and Character-Driven. So I'm putting those all up on the board next to Nigilum.
Right. Okay. You do. Now, you haven't erased our whiteboard yet.
No.
Right?
It's all there.
Okay, good. All right. So I did notice you added a second whiteboard this week, though. Because we already filled the first one up with our title speculations, our villain speculations.
Whiteboards. Yeah. I'm imagining by the time the film comes out, I'll just have my apartment filled with whiteboards with all of these adjectives that they're using to describe the film. And I think by then I will understand. Maybe before I see the film, I will understand the big picture.
Now saying that a movie is relentless, engaging, action-packed, and character-driven, isn't that like the ultimate in hedging?
I know. It really is.
Doesn't that describe pretty much, at least one of those describes pretty much every movie ever made?
It really does. I mean, it might be a stretch to say that Star Trek 09 was character-driven, although there are some pretty good characters in there, so you can even say it for that film. Yeah, it's they're just throwing stuff out there. The interesting thing about Urban's quote, though, was where he starts talking about how he got into playing how he mentally got into the role of Bones. And of course, I love Bones from the original series. But it seems like everyone I talk to, as much as they have complaints about the film, they really did like Urban's version of Bones.
I did. I mean, I thought Urban was spot on with the character of Bones. And I personally, I felt like he sounded like DeForest Kelly, but I didn't feel like he was playing DeForest Kelly.
Exactly.
I felt like he was playing Bones as his own character, but it definitely, I felt connected to the history of DeForest Kelly and character of Bones.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what he sort of talks about, that it was a combination of him and Bones and what Dee brought to the role. And he wasn't trying to do a straight impersonation, because I think that would have been a failure. I don't think anyone on the show was really doing a direct impersonation. Pine maybe slips into it a little bit from time to time.
A little bit, but still not much, though.
They did get that guy to come on and do the Leonard Nimoy impression. For playing Spock Prime for a few minutes. And
that guy was good, wasn't he?
He's pretty good. I don't know. The whole part didn't really work for me. But I guess the impersonator himself was pretty good.
He was pretty good. I really felt like I was watching Prime Spock at moments there.
At moments. Parts of it, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I do hope that this movie is, of course, I want it to be action-packed. I think it needs to be action-packed in order for the box office draw and, you know, to keep everyone engaged. Mm-hmm. But as a Star Trek fan since TOS myself, I do hope that it is character-driven. And I think the title, Into the Darkness, does give me some hope that this is a deeper, more complex movie, which is what I've been wanting to see.
I'm hoping. Well, one thing you're not going to have to worry about seeing is Batman. Because as Chris Pine did tell us this week, they're not making Batman. So as much as it may be dark, it may be a dark film, it's not going to be Batman. And I want just to be really clear that whatever Star Trek might be, it is not Batman.
Now, Greg, I don't know what to do now. I wish Chris Pine had told us this sooner, because we've got all these episodes of The Ready Room. Are we going to have to go back and revise our archives? Because all that time you and I spent talking about how they were making Batman.
I know.
It's just wasted airtime now. And I feel like a complete ass.
Well, you know, when we kept speculating about how Christopher Nolan was going to be directing and how I felt that Christian Bale was going to do a really good job as Kirk going forward, I was really looking forward to seeing Maggie Gyllenhaal as Uhura. But all of these things appear to not be what they're going for. They're not actually going for Batman. The Enterprise has not been replaced by the Batcopter. Bones is not going to be played by Chris O'Donnell. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is not showing up as a cameo as Iceman. So I'm just really confused by the fact that they're not making Batman.
Yeah, and I know that George Takei was really looking forward to reprising his role as Prime Sulu, wearing the tights as Robin.
Exactly, yep. And Chekhov, of course, was going to be wearing a mask.
Your punishment must be more severe.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't had the best weekend to start with, but this news from Chris Pine, yeah. It was really like the nail in the coffin for my weekend. I am so disappointed.
Yeah. So look forward to Star Trek Into Darkness, not the fourth in the epic Dark Knight trilogy.
When Kirk and the Enterprise entered orbit of Gamma 2 to check on an automatic communications and astrogation station, they beamed down and found instead a bottle of Coca-Cola and a bad romance. And today we're going to talk about the gamesters of Triskelion. And joining us in the Ready Room today, and wait, Greg, this isn't the Ready Room. Look at the color of that sky.
What has happened? Did the transporter malfunction?
Where the hell are we? Well, wherever we are, we're being joined by our TOS editor, Drew Stewart. Hello, Drew.
Hi, guys.
And, of course, our new managing editor of Trek FM and our Voyager editor, Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Char.
Hey, guys.
I'm actually a little worried that we're going to have a sort of like on the bridge of the Enterprise after Kirk is gone, everyone's sort of bickering. We've got a TOS episode, we've got the TOS editor, and then the managing editor, and then the host of the show. Are we just going to be arguing over who's in command all show?
Well, no, apparently. Not really, Greg. Because remember, your old titles don't mean anything here. Captain.
Captain. It doesn't matter that you're a captain, Captain. That's why I keep calling you Captain.
It's Captain. His first name, right?
It yeah. is.
Captain
Kirk.
James T is his middle name.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh, man. That's a great
Maybe
scene.
We ought to have a staff meeting about it.
I think so.
I'm going to host a mutiny. I didn't know she outranked me. You may insist that I knew, but I didn't.
Meaner, meaner, right. meaner.
So yes, everyone, please welcome officially Charlene as the managing editor for Trek FM.
Welcome, Charlene.
But despite the fact that you have that position now, I still have a feeling the show's going off the rails because...
yes. I mean,
is this not the most perfect episode of the original series? If you think about everything that's great about TOS... The gamesters of Triskelion, this is it.
It's got every cliche in the book.
It does, except for a red shirt dying, which, they could have easily replaced Uhura or Chekhov with a red shirt and had one of them die. And then it would have hit every single point. It had the bickering, it had the fighting and the Kirk dramatic pauses.
What about when, jumping way ahead, but when they're getting out of the cells and they're choked and with the eye choke, right? The magic eye choke. And
yes.
Kirk is right close up, kind of like Char often is in the camera here on the Ready Room. Kirk's like right up into the screen with the bulging eyes and it's classic Shatner.
Now, I don't actually know if I'd ever seen this show. Honestly, this is one of those ones that I'm, I'm looking at the Netflix queue, or it used to be I'd be just you know, flipping channels and, oh, it's TOS. Well, okay. You know, if it's Mirror Mirror, it's like, oh, I'm going to watch it. Or, oh, it's Doomsday Machine. I'm going to go ahead and watch it. This is one of those ones that I don't remember anyone ever talking about. I don't remember it being in the Star Trek Encyclopedia. No real reason for me to seek it out. But now my opinion has definitely changed on the show. Not to get all the way to the end. This is now one of my favorite TOS episodes. Hopefully for some of the reasons we're going to talk about going forward. But no, it's got to be. I mean, it's one of those prototypical or stereotypical or whatever, typical TOS episodes, because it has all the stuff you want. You've got Shatner being Shatner. You've got Bones and Spock bickering on the bridge. You've got little jokes from Chekhov with the WV thing. You've even got a hot young ensign at the helm. So pretty much anything you could want from a Star Trek episode is here.
And let's not forget that this was also the first on-screen appearance of Lady Gaga. So you really,
yes.
you have everything in here.
Indeed.
Some 30 years before she was born.
Right. Wearing some foil bikini, or what would right. you call that?
Which honestly was not flattering. My wife laughed. I was watching it and she's playing games and she's watching on the TV and she just, I didn't even know she was paying attention, but then Shauna comes on screen. She just starts laughing.
You got to figure it was like taped on everywhere, because there's no way that that outfit actually fits anybody without just falling off all at once.
It's not good fighting wear.
It's not good fighting wear.
Fighting at all.
No, makes no
Don't you
sense
think
at all.
that Shauna hairstyle plus the Q mustache and the barrel roll T-shirt should altogether be the official Ready Room uniform?
Hot.
I cannot. Unlike the rest of you, I cannot grow my hair like that. I'm sorry. It can't be done.
I kept waiting though. I kept waiting for Shauna to reveal that it was a wig and that she had something hidden inside there. I don't know if it was something horrible or like an escape mechanism.
Some kind of strange alien organ.
Right.
Yeah, she's got one of those brains in her hair.
That's what it is, yeah. It's hiding up in there.
Who was it, that person that Jadzia was dating on DS9 that had the visible brain?
Yes.
Maybe that's what's going on, because that hair is just ridiculous and it doesn't appear to have any use. And it also... There's that tradition of things on Star Trek being spray painted. Doesn't it look like it was just spray painted with green spray paint?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I tell you what, I could do that for Halloween.
Right.
In 5 seconds.
Oh, it really does.
I like that the lead Thrall guy in the Blu-ray, you could see the line for his bald cap.
Oh, man.
It was really well done.
Speaking of Thralls, you know what's really fun in this episode is if when you listen... Because it sounds like this the first time. Not thralls, but thongs. When Kirk first asks, what is the purpose of thongs? And then from that point forward, for me, for the whole episode, everything was thongs.
Honestly,
it,
if I had seen this as a kid, I would have no idea what they were talking about. Throgs? Thwongs?
Well, and not only that, it's drill thralls.
Drill thongs,
which I kept hearing as grill thralls.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like, I don't... What on earth are you guys talking about?
I heard it as you need a new drill thong.
Wow, we're like 5 minutes into it and Chris is bringing it in.
I tell you what, Chris, I had to do a double take myself. I heard thongs as well, and that is when it just starts going off the rails. And if you've watched this episode, you know how fast this happens anyway. Yeah. It doesn't need any help.
No, for me, this episode goes off the rails. This episode of Star Trek goes off the rails. Not the Ready Room. We've already done that.
Right.
It goes off the rails. As soon as Kirk orders phasers and the phasers don't fire, so everyone waits, and then he orders hand-to-hand. Like,
yes.
If he did not order hand-to-hand, they were all just going to stand there and be captured.
Just keep clicking the phaser, yes.
Apparently.
You've got to follow orders. He said, shoot your phasers. Right. Until he says not to shoot your phasers, you keep shooting those phasers.
He is the captain.
Right.
They follow directions,
I did want to mention,
I guess.
Shatner seems to be waiting to get to this part, because at the beginning of the episode, they're orbiting this planet, and Shatner, I don't know, he's like... Captain's log, stardate 15, whatever. We're doing a survey mission of some planet out in the... Whatever. Yeah, anyway, Spock, go ahead and mind the store. Hurry, you're with me. He just does not appear, and I don't know if it was a Shatner decision or if it's just... If it's actually what Kirk was just not feeling this mission. You know, there's no possibility of hot babes down on this planet, so whatever. This is what TOS usually is like. This is on the bridge of the Enterprise. When nothing exciting's happening, Kirk's just kind of bored, honestly.
I can imagine.
I mean, really, you got that?
Think about all the missions we don't get to see.
Right.
You know, the routine mission, the you know, scanning of the comet radiation on the neutral zone. You know, it's just like that's 90% of their job is just like, oh, we're going to shuttle this person over here and nothing exciting happened.
Yeah, Captain's Log, Stardate 1594. Going warp 1.7 again because one of our nacelles is out. We're doing maintenance, I guess. And it's taken us a long time. Basically, nothing's happened in the past 3 days. I'm watching sports ball on the holodeck. I don't know.
I was disappointed in the lack of sports ball in this episode.
There was no sports ball.
Well, there is that speech that Kirk makes about how sports ball is really... I know I'm getting ahead of it, but, you know, sports ball is really not helpful. And he basically has this whole speech against sports to the providers. The other thing I really noticed about him was the places and the times he was able to do captain's logs. You've got Shauna has a spear up to his neck and he records a captain's log. You've got the guy whipping him and he's recording a captain's log during it. I don't know if he's got a little pocket recorder that he pulls out. It's like, whoosh, captain's log started. Whoosh, I'm getting whipped right now, so forgive me. Whoosh. We're Stardate unknown.
It must be built into his brain.
I guess maybe, yeah, mental narration is going on.
He's got nothing better to do, apparently. Yeah, I did notice how awkward that was.
Yeah, and it's okay. Compounded because, you know, the show goes to commercial at a dramatic point, and then it wants to come back with a captain's log. But did they never give thought to having an in-universe explanation for how he was doing the captain's log? And it's not even done like, you know, he's back on the ship and he's reminiscing. No, it's really done in moment. It's like, we are here. I am being whipped. There's a bondage suit being put on me. My shirt is being ripped open. Like, but he's saying it in the moment.
You have to admit the most impressive one is when he's completely lip-locked making out with Lady Gaga. And he's like, Captain's Log.
This is true.
I'm like totally making out with Lady Gaga right now. Yeah. It's like, how
She's
are you
so
speaking? Your lips are sealed.
Right.
Oh man.
He really gets to the relationship with Shauna really fast. I don't know that if I were beamed to an unknown planet and set to be a gladiator, that I'd really just be looking to be making out with the locals. I mean, I talked about this zombie thing I did recently, and there were some girls around, but I was more worried about the zombies coming after us than telling somebody about love. He goes on this whole speech about, this is the darkest planet I've ever seen. And she's like, no, but there's three suns. And he's like, it's a metaphor, for God's sake. I'm talking about how you guys... And it's like, seriously, Kirk, just... You don't need to be speechifying and kissing and just... No, figure out your way off the planet. Like, that's step one.
Okay, but I thought he was kind of using her in a way as a way of finding solutions.
That's what I expected, but that didn't really happen.
You're saying Kirk was using someone?
He's not Riker, for goodness sake.
Right. What do you think? Was he able to use her, Charlene? Like what did she have to... She was also a fellow prisoner.
Well, he was trying to just get information, put together what he could to find some sort of solution out of here. And then it works to a point, and then the caller starts choking her, whatever. And then we get that wonderful Shatner-esque moment of, don't hurt her! Hurt me!
Yes,
he's talking to the sky, and he's really just Shatner at his finest.
Well, so, he does that before. When they're about to tie up Uhura, he steps and he's like, no, I want to be tied up.
He's very, you know, he's really willing to participate in all of this, isn't he?
He really is. He's like, if anyone's going to be whipped, it's going to be me.
Yeah, if there's going to be any pain involved, I want it.
I'm the captain. Everyone knows. You whip the captain first.
You whip the captain
That's
first.
That's right. And just don't forget it.
And so, Char, oh, if man. I understand correctly, basically what you're telling us is that Shauna keeps the information about how to escape the planet deep inside her throat, basically. That's what you're saying, right?
Well, I got to say, Shatner was sure trying, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was.
Because he was going for it. He didn't find it, but he was trying really hard.
I wonder if Shatner wrote this parts of this episode. Like, well, you know, Kirk has this lovely speech about things, and then he makes out with her. No. He talks to her nice and calmly, and then he makes out with her.
Right.
I think sometimes Shatner just used scripts as, I'm going to make out with this hot girl.
Right.
I'm pretty sure
that's
what he did.
As I looked up, porn star?
Really?
Really.
I was actually, no, this is actually true. I was speaking with, well, I think we need to get a sound clip, Chris, for when I bring up Sci-Fi Commons on the show, because this is the fourth or fifth time I've done it today. But yeah, I was talking with him, and apparently she was in a Playboy that Sci-Fi Commons found when he was 13 or 14. And it was like a full-on with the actual outfit from the show. But she's topless, basically.
Okay. Wow. I do have a sound clip already, Greg, for when you bring up Sci-Fi Commons.
Oh, great.
There you go. Okay. So I think basically what we're saying here, though, is that Shatner is at his most Shatner-esque in this episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He hits every nuance of the stereotypical Kirk Shatner acting. The pauses, the gestures, which the audience can't see, you got to flick your hand at the camera.
Drew gesturing at the camera right now. Yes.
Right.
And he also managed to convince them to let him do all of his own stunts, because I didn't see the stunt guy in any of these shots, which it's really easy to see in HD. But like he'll do a barrel roll. And then he'll come up and it's just obviously Shatner, nice big close up.
I mean, Chekhov's doing his own stunts too. I mean, he climbed on the back of the gladiator with his belt. So Koenig was doing those stunts too.
Poor
Chekhov.
Can we talk about how useless Chekhov and Uhura are in fights?
Now, I had to look it up because at first I missed the captain's log when I was watching it earlier today, and I didn't understand why he was taking Chekhov and Uhura. But I guess he managed to find a station that was exactly communications and astronavigation. It's like,
yes.
Oh, so that's why he had to take them. Because I thought it was like, that's it, a it random an assortment.
It is a little unusual, isn't it?
Well, basically, they needed to leave Spock and Bones and Scotty on the ship. And then they took whoever else. Because it's not like they used Chekhov and Uhura for anything on the planet. If you really watch the episode, it's all Kirk on the planet. And Chekhov and Uhura are there for like maybe
for
one
Kirk
or two
mad
lines.
About.
Right. Yeah. You know that the original name of this episode was The Gamesters of Pentathlon. And in that story, they were actually going to Gamma 2 to check on a Federation sports medical facility specializing in fencing injuries. And he was actually taking Bones and Sulu with him. But
there you go.
Sulu wasn't on the ship for some reason. And so they had to rewrite the script and make it a communications and astronavigation facility.
See, it's things like that that confuse our listeners. Because I listen to the show sometimes. I listen to a DS9 show and I'm like, really? Really? No, that was the original title. For those who confused, that was the original title of the episode.
But, and Takei did not make it onto this episode, although he was in the original script. He was shooting the Green Berets. So this is one of those funny episodes where Takei's not there and Koenig is, which is sort of a swap from the first season. Right. But Chekhov gets like the one scene where the, what did you call him or her, Charlene, the transvestite?
It seemed like a transvestite to me. And no offense to trannies anywhere.
It's
but
the neon
like,
transvestite, right?
Yes.
Yes. Like what was it? Pink hair and some unusual outfit. and a masculine sounding voice trying to be feminine.
Well,
That's why it sounds like a transvestite to me.
I think it was just Stuart Baird in the editing room doing voice modulation. I think that's really all that was going on.
That's what it was.
And I don't even think she's that. I mean, maybe this is, again, coming back to the fact that I find the rubber women, you know, I don't see the rubber mask. I did not
rubber
find
women.
Her that unattractive. Well, what? Not rubber women. You know what I'm saying? The rubber on the forehead and the scales and all the stuff that.
You're not improving, dude.
Goodness. Can
this
we move
is where
on?
Greg talks himself into a hole.
I wish the audience could see Shar and I trying to look at each other in the camera like, what? What?
It's amazing how you guys
Greg,
are looking at each other in the boxes.
Rubbers, okay?
It's amazing. What I'm saying is I found her, even though she had like bushy eyebrows and the voice modulation, I found her more attractive than Shauna was. And I can't explain it.
So Tamun loves her some Russian, but you love you some Tamun. That's what you're saying here, right?
Chekhov.
Chekhov. Oh, Chekhov.
Chekhov.
Oh, dear.
I did think normally when they do a solid color on somebody, it looks really bad. But I think they did really well with her yellow. I'll give her that. She certainly was yellow.
She certainly was.
It's reminding me of that Coldplay song, and that is it. I'm drawing a blank.
Right.
Sorry.
Oh, man. Okay, so we know everyone except Kirk is useless in a fight, basically. Mm-hmm. Shatner is at his most Shatner-esque. Now, we also wanted to talk about a lot of the cliches in this episode. Now,
right.
I was watching this last night, and I tweeted that I don't know if I'm supposed to be laughing out loud every time Shauna speaks, but I am. And I really think Shauna should have her own show on Comedy Central. Now, this isn't exactly, it's not the cliche here or anything, but I died laughing when she gave Kirk some food and Kirk says, "Well, I don't know what you call this, but it's delicious." And she says very deadpan, "It's nourishment. We call it that." Who is writing this stuff? I think I sent Greg a message. I said, you know, this writing is pure gold. You just can't come up with this stuff.
Well, then back on the ship, we've got Bones saying, you've got us on a wild goose chase. And Spock says, "No, I'm taking us after the captain, Lieutenant O'Hara, and Chekhov, not chasing after any aquatic fowl."
Yes.
Like, oh, goodness. And then what? Well, the other one was where? What did Spock say? Oh, it's that Scotty says, "Captain, they've just disappeared off the transporter pad." And Spock says, "You mean they transported down to the planet? They vanished. It's called a transporter, Scotty."
Yeah.
You transport.
Use it all the time.
You think you'd this know this by now.
And Spock says, "I suppose you mean in a manner not consistent with the normal operation of a transporter."
Right.
Scotty is so
line.
Hilarious. Like, well, of course that's what you mean.
I was totally watching it like, they're not going to go with this. Are they really? Are they really going to make this joke? This is the greatest episode ever.
That was my thought, too.
And Scotty says, "Of course that's what I mean, you Vulcan jackass. Do you think I would call you if they just beamed down?"
Right. And now at this point, three crew members are missing. So of course they play that little, "Oh, we just made a joke," flute sound.
That's right.
Like,
I love the flute.
Really, that's usually like played at the end of the episode. You know, after the situation's over with and somebody makes a crack about how, you know, Spock is actually, you know, got emotions, and they play the do-do-do-do-do. But no, this is like the beginning of the episode, and it's like the moment of high tension because the captain's missing. It's not really the time to be cracking wise, guys.
Right, but if you follow this episode just based on the music alone, you know exactly what's happening.
That's very true.
Because from the get-go, we have the useless fight, and they've got the classic fight music.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then anytime we cut to Spock and Bones and Scotty on the ship, they do the standard, "Oh my gosh, we're sailing in space, la 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 la." Yeah. Da, da, da.
I'm pretty sure that no new music was written for this episode.
No.
And from the beginning where they I don't even know what to call the effect, where they cut the film and put the actors in there and then cut the film back on and they appear. They've got the bum, 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 ba, bum. And it's like, yeah, you just didn't even bother, did you? And that just goes on through the whole episode. Yeah. It's like, I know where that piece of music comes from. There's that piece of music from that episode. All through the whole thing.
I was noticing that, too.
It's the same stuff throughout the whole episode.
It's the whole episode.
It's like, it's cues.
They're reusing stuff all through it. I mean, we're going to get to the Devil in the Dark backdrop. There's even the point where Kirk says, You know, they're sort of wandering in the woods, and Kirk says, "What is this place?" And Shauna says, "It is not used since the man trap."
Hey, at least she's being
That's
honest.
That's true.
At least she is. Oh, God. That's Shauna. The other one is when Kirk asks her, "Where are you from?" She says, "Well, me, I've always been here." "No, where are your parents from?" "She who bore me was killed in a preseason bout." I cracked up laughing at that, too. It's just the delivery. I don't know.
Yeah.
She has the best lines.
She really does.
Yes.
I mean, this whole episode, I feel like they were just really going for it. I mean, this is a whole state of episodes. I mean, right after this comes a piece of the action. Hadn't they just done A Trouble with Tribbles? It's like they were really just gunning for the comedy. And even an episode like this that you feel like it didn't have to be comedy, they were really, really going for it.
Maybe, although I don't really think that this was intended to be comedy, though.
Really?
I don't think so.
Yeah, really?
I don't know.
I mean,
there's times
there
that
are,
I was laughing out loud.
No, there are intentional funny moments in here, but I actually laughed all the way through this episode. I was almost in tears at a few moments, and I don't think that it was intended to be a straight comedy.
I don't know. You've got Spock saying, "I would welcome any suggestion, Doctor, even an emotional one." And Bones goes, "Of all the times to ask for my opinion."
Yeah.
Oh, it was supposed to be funny, right?
If people could only see Greg's dance. Right?
Yeah. That was impressive.
That was
if
hilarious.
Only.
That was good. But let's not forget, I mean, this halfway through this episode, they go into this whole speech about slavery. I mean,
that's true.
They actually are going for a very serious, very direct, club you over the head with the triskelion battle spear, whatever that thing is, social message in this episode. And let's not forget the tearful ending where I really thought that they were going to break out into a musical as Shauna looks up into the sky and says, "Oh, I will never forget you, James T. Kirk." And what did you tell me, Greg?
And pretty much he forgot her while he was in the transporter beam.
That's right. Exactly.
Right.
Whatever. I wrote a non-canon novel where she comes back and finds Kirk in bed with another woman, and then she fights the other woman to the death.
Now, let me ask you this.
Oh, fantastic.
Let me ask you this, Drew. In your novel, when they are fighting, do they follow the same rules as they do on Triskelia, whatever, for this is? Do you have to stay in your designated color or else be deprived of a weapon? Because, you know, the shape on the field there is blue and yellow. Mm-hmm. Now, before the final bout, Kirk is warned that if you leave your designated color, you will be deprived of a weapon.
Yeah.
Yet mm-hmm. Kirk
very
is,
serious.
He's yellow in this bout. He's stepping all over the blue. And he is never deprived of a weapon.
And when they say something so blatant like that, I'm instantly going to be watching. I mean, if they hadn't mentioned it,
I mean,
if they just said, you know, you're sort of in the yellow area, but when they make it such a thing, I'm going to be watching to make sure, because it's like, oh, this is a dramatic moment. What if Kirk steps in the blue?
Right.
And then he does.
He's all over the place.
And then he does again.
I mean, I needed instant replay. I was like, college football, instant replay. Was he in bounds? Was he out of bounds? I'm going to stop the bout for 15 minutes. I can figure out if Kirk really stepped out of the yellow. But
it's obvious that the providers really they don't really pay attention. I mean, sometimes they do. I mean, they're in the middle of, you know, the man trap. And, you know, Kirk makes out with them. And then they're like, ah, we're going to choke her. But then, like, you know, Kirk makes out with her again. And then, you know, gives her a little knuckle sandwich. And she falls over.
Yeah.
And right? and they don't do anything. They can they can see them out on the other, you know, 2 or 3 miles away. But they can't, you know, like, oh, the prisoner's trying to escape. I mean, do they care? Are they not paying attention? Are they? Do they bet on everything? Is it some kind of comedy thing where they just, like, you know, bet on everything? Well, you think that guy's gonna trip over that stick there? Yeah, I bet 40 quatloos that he will.
Well, this is another case of 40 quatloos. Yes, let's take a quick 13 trisec break.
Yeah.
Goodness. Now, did anyone else, when they said trisecs, did anyone else count to find out and do the math? What is a trisec in our Earth minutes?
I assumed it was going to go to commercial and it was going to be like a 15-minute thing. But then like 45 seconds later, they were back out. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's like,
oh, it's not what I thought it was.
It was like Rocky. Like they're you know, they're going at it and then it's like, okay, here's, you know, the bell rings and they put him in the corner and Shauna's, you know, Shauna's there with a rag and a water. It's like, you got to get out there, Rocky. You got to. All right, Captain Kirk, you got to do it. You know, just, you know, a couple quick ones to his chest. You can do it. You can do it. Ding, ding. And, you know, Kirk's back out there. It's like, really? I don't think this is how fights to the death really go.
Well, that was a practice round, that one, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. That's true.
That's because they were newcomers. I mean, that's the explanation in the episode.
Yeah. That is true.
We're going to go easy on you because you're newcomers. You know, we're gonna give you extra nourishment because you're newcomers.
I forgot to bring this up on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
But as a subject, but where did these gamesters find out about the Enterprise? And why were they just like, oh good, we've got Uhura and Chekov? Like, really? You scouted the whole ship and you came up with Chekov and Uhura.
Yeah, that is the thing. Like, they waited for them to be on the transporter pad. It's like, no, they could have pulled anybody from anywhere.
Yeah. They could have pulled the whole crew.
Yeah.
Right. They don't want Spock. And, I mean, who beat Kirk already? I mean, we know that Spock is the top of the Enterprise fight thing. I don't know.
Absolutely. I just
feel
like...
Would that have not been entertaining? Yeah.
And you know, somewhere in the universe... Dwayne The Rock Johnson is out there as a professional wrestler. He's in the Delta Quadrant, but they can pull him over here too, can't they?
Sure,
we don't even know where this planet is.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I don't know.
It seems limited that they grabbed Uhura and Chekov.
Yeah, well, the reason why they didn't get The Rock was because Desilu Studios didn't have an affiliation with WWE Wrestling just yet.
Are you sure? Yeah, they weren't running promos during TOS.
No, I'm not sure. I don't follow it.
Stay tuned after Star Trek The Original Series for the National Broadcast Company bringing you World Wrestling Federation.
So they weren't doing WWE crossovers yet, but apparently they were doing other product placement in here because everyone knows that during a fight to the death, what you need during the 13 trisec break is an ice cold Coca-Cola.
Yeah, absolutely do. He takes one little sip of the Coca-Cola as Charlene takes one little sip of her Bailey's, and it just rejuvenates him for the whole rest of the episode. Like, he just, he's ready to go. It's like Red Bull giving you wings.
Yeah, he's Bailey's is giving me wings right now.
I hope so. So before the Coca-Cola, he's losing the battle. After Coca-Cola, he's got it in the bag.
Apparently.
I think that's the best product placement I've ever seen. I mean, that's better than the Budweiser in the new Star Trek film.
Yeah. Coca-Cola, it turns you into a superhero.
Absolutely.
Only in the 60s would they let you get away with
that. Right. Was that back when they had the cocaine in the Coca-Cola?
Probably.
Where, you know... I mean, maybe they had something, if not the cocaine. I'm not sure when they stopped doing that exactly.
They had to feel sugar, at least.
They never stopped doing it on Triskelia.
Oh, that's this is like okay. Mexican Coke. This is Triskelion yeah. Coke.
This one is made
with cocaine inside.
This has pure cane sugar and cocaine in it.
Well, that explains why Shatner, the rest of the episode, was like, you guys, have you seen the slavery here? We got to stop the slavery. I just feel like if we work really hard, we can stop the slavery. We can free all these people. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing, guys.
Yeah. We can do it now.
We can do it.
Yeah.
I'm the king of the world.
I'm going to fight. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh my god. Wow.
This is what happens when I drink a little Bailey's, guys. Go.
And then we haven't even talked about the Collars of Obedience.
I was now, just Charlene, about to say, this sounds like the perfect time to talk about the Obedience Collars.
I wanted to ask you, Charlene, how many Collars of Obedience you have around your new house?
You know, okay, I gotta be completely honest here. I don't have any. But after watching this episode, I'm going to order 5, one for each room.
Perfect.
You're not going to make him wear it all the time.
I'm just going to have a lot of backup. Oh, that's all I'm saying.
Because they come off so easily at the end for everybody.
That's
but Kirk.
Do,
Kirk
yes.
has to grab his and he has to rip it off dramatically and throw it to the ground. Everybody else
he
is just
does.
Like, they just kind of daintily pick it off and drop it.
No, but not Kirk. He pull it off with a passion.
Oh, man. But those collars were pretty fantastic. I don't know. Just the fact that they were called the Collars of Obedience.
And they changed color. That's
kind of
cool.
They do. They do.
Yeah.
So it matched your outfit no matter what you're wearing.
Yeah.
It's, there's just...
Well, I mean, okay, Lady Gaga's on this planet for one thing. It's got to be kind of fashionable, right?
Right. That's true. Speaking of fashionable now... When Lars comes out at the beginning with his little dagger, I mean, isn't he like the prettiest pretty boy gladiator you've ever seen? Yeah.
What does he remind me of? He reminds me of somebody, and I can't put my finger on it.
Well, he looks like a little gladiator Elvis, is what he looks like.
He's got Elvis,
slick
that works.
Hair.
I mean, he comes out, and he's all like this, but he's got this little dagger right here.
Tiny dagger.
And his hair slick back, and he's... I don't know. It wasn't very intimidating, I have to admit.
They should have done Lars, like Jailhouse Rock or something. Absolutely.
I mean, on a kind of more serious note, okay, so Shauna comes and brings Kirk some food. I always forget her name, but the transvestite Tamun. Brings Chekhov some food. Tamun. Yeah. Lars comes into Uhura's little cell and like attacks her.
Yeah.
Like what the hell, man?
Yeah.
That's not your job description.
Not cool, dude.
No.
Hands off.
Yeah, like seriously.
But
it gave
Kirk a dramatic moment of him, you know, reaching through the bars, screaming.
Oh, what's he doing to you?
Right, but then Shauna shows up and he stops caring all of a sudden. I mean, Uhura is still being attacked when Shauna just sort of walks by.
Hey, you all right over there?
She's fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, you'll be okay.
I guess.
She can take
the
care
scream
of herself.
Stops,
let me know
so.
If you need anything.
I was kind of actually really disturbed by that bit. I don't know. Lars, I was kind of on Lars's side until that point. I was kind of like, oh yeah, I kind of want to do some Lars cosplay, you know, go for that gladiator, that short skirt and the tiny dagger. But when I can't get behind the whole, you know, what did he say? Refusal is not permitted.
That's, right.
That's not okay, man.
Yeah, seriously, molesting Uhura is not okay.
No, not at all.
And the nice thing is it seemed like she fended for herself just
fine. Oh, she
fine.
Did, yes.
So good for
she
her.
Did.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Starfleet training.
That a girl.
Oh, man.
That's right.
I was just waiting for like that scene, who was it, Callie in Battlestar, who bites the guy's ear off.
Oh,
I was
yeah,
waiting for
yeah.
her to bite Lars's ear off. I think that would have been amazing.
So say it all!
So Mike Tyson set an example for the future. Was that it?
Oh, for the past.
Well, just remember.
Oh, spoilers. Good point.
Right.
Oh, this whole time stream stuff. I'm so done with. I don't know where the hell I am.
Stardate unknown. Kirk said it a bunch of times. Stardate unknown.
Yeah.
We don't know.
He doesn't know how long.
Sure,
it's been.
Only 10 minutes have passed, but that means I have no idea what the stardate is anymore.
Because the math is so hard to do. I read the article
really
on our website. I don't understand what's going on. It's been 10 minutes, so that's like 1/2400th of a day, which
it's 47 trisecs. Let's just go with that.
Exactly.
So we've decided here basically that Lars has great hair, a short skirt, and a small dagger. That's what.
Absolutely.
What is that?
Maybe his
about
dagger him? Hadn't been so small, or her might have been interested.
Maybe.
Is this why you're not doing the Lars cosplay? one of the dozen outfits. I mean, really, if our listeners have been keeping track of how many outfits that Chris and Greg have promised each of us, we're just going to constantly be changing.
Yes, Star Trek Las Vegas weekend for us. We're going to be like on the Grammys. We're just going to be changing outfits, you know, every 30 minutes. You're just going to see us
come
back.
It's like a Lady Gaga concert.
It's exactly.
We come out for 4 minutes. We're wearing something. We go back. Another 4 minutes. We got another outfit on.
How many people want, you're going to have to schedule times with us. You know, do you want pictures with us as a staff meeting or pictures with us the Gamesters of Triskelion?
$20 a piece.
The best part, I really recommend the staff meeting to everybody, because the best part about it is that you can actually, what are you cracking up about, Greg? You can actually.
Charlene. Oh, but please
what
go
did
on.
I do?
Charlene.
The bottle's comically huge, Charlene.
It is.
You've got to admit that.
Has,
it's bigger than your head.
It's 750.
I was
going to
say,
Charlene
has literally a 750 milliliter bottle of Bailey's and is doing her own in-show drinking game, apparently. Every time she's not speaking, she's taking a swig of Bailey's. What's it?
Not a very good drinking game.
I get it. No, this is it. I didn't know. It's this in-show drinking game. Every time we use a definite or indefinite article, Char takes a swig of Bailey's.
I used the word "the." Time to drink.
So now what?
All right. So listen, everyone. Seriously, I recommend the staff meeting, because the best thing about the staff meeting costume is that you can climb onto the table in the middle of all of us, stretch out, strike a pose, and get your photo taken.
Put your leg up.
Yes.
Do the Riker leg shot.
I'm still pushing for each of us from a different conference room table.
Absolutely.
Me from TOS.
Yeah.
Char from Voyager, and they all like magnetically connect together. That we could take our conference room elsewhere, but also connect together into a conference room across the universe.
It could be great.
Speaking of the staff meeting, but try to bring it back to the episode, you know, this episode really could have used a staff meeting. I mean, you've got Bones and Spock and Scotty on the bridge.
Literally.
The whole episode.
And they're literally discussing mutiny in front of the entire episode.
Yes. And this is, can I bring up, please, the mutiny zoom? Because you've got this shot of Spock, Bones, and they're talking, and it's like, unless you want to talk about, and then the camera like zooms in 4 stops, mutiny.
Yeah.
And then it zooms back out. It's like, just zoom in for the mutiny.
I actually thought that was really well done.
But again, it's in front of the entire crew, guys. Like, there's a staff meeting room.
Yeah.
Right.
The bridge crew.
It's a standing set.
A staff meeting.
You've got the coffee. You've got that little spinny television. Like, just go in there and have a conversation.
Yeah. Call up the yeoman and get it done, guys.
But not the way Kirk usually does.
It's logical.
Right.
So I'm waiting for the mutiny zoom filter in Instagram. That's what I'm waiting
for. Absolutely.
That would be fantastic.
So the other thing I wanted to bring up is how apparently there's no medical issues anywhere in this entire crew. Because Bones isn't needed on sick bay whatsoever.
He's on the bridge
he can
all
just
the time.
Hang out on the bridge. He's just sort of standing next to the captain. They don't even have a station for him, but he just stands next to the captain's chair. You know, anytime Spock says something, he's like, "No, I don't agree with that." You'd think Spock would be like, "Bones,
go to sick bay
now."
It's the exact opposite of the Next Generation. It's when something important is going on here, Bones just hangs out on the bridge. But when something important is going on TNG, Picard goes and hangs out with Beverly in sickbay.
Absolutely. Right. And of course, James.
He has the staff meeting over there.
Well, that's because Picard can't go down on the planet like Kirk can.
Right. That's true.
True.
And of course, Janeway keeps the doctor. He's a hologram, so he has to stay in sickbay. I think the EMH barely knows what's going on in the ship half the time. And I think Janeway likes it that way.
Yes.
Imagine if the EMH could be hanging out, you know, between Janeway and Chakotay, just sort of standing there complaining about everything Janeway does. Yes,
Coco.
Between Kathy and Coco.
Or as I call him, Bob.
Well, what if Coco could wear the mobile emitter and then the doc could just be there between him and Kathy all the time?
Oh, man.
I mean, it would make for some awkward moments in the ready room, but...
Oh, man.
I am sensing sexual tension between you two, Captain.
Really?
Coco.
As a doctor, I prescribe that you two just get it on.
Let's get it on. Let's get it on.
Just go for it, guys.
Yes.
Resolutions wasn't enough.
Mandatory holodeck time. Just get this over with, please.
That's the thing. They got it out of the way really early on, and then they were like, well, we got to never do this again. It's like, no, guys. You figured it out. This is how you fix everything. Just... argue on the bridge, go home, do your business, come back to the bridge in the morning. Like, you know, that's how you do it. And but no, they decide never again. It's a mistake. which series are we talking about? Are we talking about Enterprise?
No idea what we're talking about anymore. So.
Oh yeah, TOS. Here we go.
Are we finally doing that Search for Spock episode? I've lost track.
We're actually talking about Star Trek III.
Finally. I really love the scene where the bird of prey explodes.
Wait, it doesn't explode in this one.
Oh, no.
My favorite moment was the reuse of Trelane's wong. As the crew disappears from the transporter pad, and then every time that lead thrall guy appears,
yes,
and the obvious everybody hold really still while he comes into frame,
yeah,
and then you can move
Ta-da.
Again.
It yeah, was love it. Yeah. It's like the special effects I did when I was like 12 years old and using like a Hi-8 video camera. It's like turn it off, hold a staff now. Press the button again. It's like, and that's what they're doing on the original series. It's like the cheapest special effect possible.
Special effects on a budget,
right?
Buddy.
Well, I was going to say, you have to admit, though, you have to admire these guys, though, for their creativity of, we have no money to make this TV show. And remember what TV shows were like at the time. I mean, the stuff that they're doing, they were really pushing the envelope, and they were able to do it by finding everything that they had on hand and finding a way to use it. And I have to say that over the years watching TOS, these things, it's fun to joke about them now on the Ready Room and on Twitter, but these things never really bothered me about the original series.
No, not really.
But if you look for them, you can see them, and it's very amusing to talk about. But, you know, they made the best of what they had.
Right, and this is good news for people like Greg and me sometimes making our own short films and stuff on low budget. It's that even though you can see things like this and it's obvious that you know we didn't have a budget when we did this and that the effects are cheesy and stuff, but I mean it's 46 years this weekend. You know, it's been I mean, not insanely popular when it first came out, or at least not that NBC could see. But, I mean, we're still talking about this stuff. I mean...
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Your short film, your zombie film that you filmed this weekend, you know, could be, you know, in 46 years, people could be talking about it. And making fun of it, maybe, for you know, the shoddy makeup here and there or whatever. But
let's just say that...
It's inspiring for everybody. It really
46
is.
Years from now, if there's a big convention for Greg's zombie film, I know that there's one guy who's going to be at the convention. Let's just say that.
HarbinCon.
Now, I did want to talk about the money they did spend in what has to be my favorite scene of the episode, what I like to call Kirk versus the evil gambling addicted jello molds.
Dude, yes. So, that's what they were.
This is where the episode turns into both Spock's brain and the devil in the dark all at once, yes. Which is really quite an accomplishment, I must say.
And now, it's got this weird David Cronenberg thing to it, because they're like organic and pulsing.
But they don't pulse when they're talking. They just pulse all the time. Right, so you can't really tell which one's provider one and which one's provider two.
Well, remember, provider one is the voice from Mission Impossible. So that one you can always remember.
So if I chose to accept that mission, I would have remembered which one. Yes.
Your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to bet 40 quatlus.
Yeah, there you go.
Your limit is 40 quatlus. Don't go 50. Don't go 60, no matter what provider number two does. So what was your reaction, really, when after everything, as glorious as it was, happened up to this point, when Kirk suddenly shows up on Janus 6 and there's this glass dome with three brains in it, what were you thinking?
Was the point where I decided this was the greatest episode of the original series that I'd ever. Yeah. Shirtless Kirk yelling at three brains. You cannot.
Absolutely.
You can't write this stuff. Right. This just had to have happened organically.
But you can.
Shirtless Kirk.
And they did.
Yelling at three brains in a cave from The Devil in the Dark. During the episode, The Gamesters of Triskelion.
It's the consummate Star Trek episode right here.
You just thought like the
Horda. I mean, how do you
thought the
that?
Horda was going to scoot by in the background, right?
Right. He should have. That would have been a great
Absolutely.
Touch.
I feel sorry for Mike Okuda, because I'm sure he was just like, I want to replace that reused mat. But like Kirk dances in front of it without his shirt on, and then like the glass and the reflection. I'm sure Mike was like, why can't I replace that? What would he have replaced it with, though?
Well, they could have just designed a whole intricate underground lair for the providers.
Yeah, they could have done that. They could have used the backdrop from Operation Annihilate. You know, I mean, there are all kinds of options you have for backdrops in TOS.
I don't know. Part of the charm of this episode is how so much stuff was reused.
It is.
And I think this just adds to it. I think if they changed it, I would have been a little angry.
I'm disappointed that they didn't use Lerpas when they were fighting, though. They designed a whole new weapon exactly like the Lerpas, but completely different.
You know what?
They had the kind of hook thing that was cool.
Mm-hmm. What would have been the perfect touch? Now, of course, they would have to go into the future a little bit to get this, but they could have done it in the remastered. Is if they had the hippie band from The Way to Eden playing on the side during the battle to kind of cheer everyone on.
A bunch of red shirt cheerleaders.
Yay! Absolutely.
Yeah. Herbert.
Now, didn't you feel this episode was a little understaffed? Like, you know, there had to be more people on this planet, but we only see like six total people.
Well, it's because they only had six interns on the show. You remember from the Galileo 7, the interns throwing the spears from off camera, and they had the one creature attacking the shuttle. It's kind of like that here. They really are understaffed on this series.
Yeah, they were stretched pretty thin.
Right. Right, so I just would have expected more of a big battle at the end, but no, it comes down to Kirk. Is it Kirk versus Lars? I forget who he fights at the very end.
Oh,
no, Lars. It's the big guy, and it's some random Andorian that we'd never seen before.
Oh gosh, yes. Thank you for mentioning that, Drew. Now, I did ask this when I was watching. That Andorian, now was that the same Andorian that Kirk fights in the corridor on Journey to Babel? Because
I watched that that episode this weekend, and I'm like, that fight came out of nowhere.
It did.
I'm watching this episode, then all of a sudden Kirk is punching somebody in the face. I'm like, what is what?
It is, because a couple things. The first time I watched this a couple days ago, I think Greg was watching it, and he mentioned the Andorian fight, And I said, man, that Jeffrey Combs is everywhere. I am so impressed with how many times Jeffrey Combs can get himself into Star Trek. But the other, this is my idea. I think they should do this. I think they should put a fight scene between Kirk and an Andorian in every episode of the original series.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That would rock.
Wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I'm all
for it. Spock's brain, for some reason, is being guarded by an Andorian.
Right. Imagine this.
Yeah.
Even when you least expect it. Like in For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky, when Kirk and Bones are inside the asteroid spaceship and no one else is around. It's just Kirk and Bones. And Kirk is trying to convince Bones that he really should come back to the Enterprise. And suddenly this Andorian leaps out and Kirk has to kick his ass before he can go back to convincing Bones to come back to the Enterprise.
Kirk is on the planet fighting the Gorn and then an Andorian shows up.
The next time that
City on the Edge of Forever, Edith Keeler starts running into the road and the Andorian wants to stop her and Kirk has to punch the Andorian in the face so that Edith Keeler's gonna die.
The next time they remaster this series, I propose that's what happens in every episode. The Andorian pops out somewhere.
It has to.
And the guy has no name.
We'll be sure to tell Mike.
Kirk has to defeat him.
He's definitely played
by
Jeffrey
Combs. It's sort of like Kenny on South Park.
Mike and Denise's kids. We'll have to tell them that.
Right.
That would be so awesome.
So I do like how in this episode, Kirk goes up against the Andorian and Lars and the big Bucktooth guy. So they upgrade the cable package on the Enterprise so that they can get the pay-per-view.
I know.
Match. It's like
always happen?
Do they seriously need to watch what's going on?
Apparently.
I mean, in an arena, they kept, Spock was giving his color commentary and all that kind of stuff. In this one, we never flash back to them watching it or because Uhura's on the planet doing this, the whoo.
Right. Yeah.
So they don't need to cut back to her on the bridge going, whoo.
And Chekhov is on the planet, so they can't reuse that piece of footage of him
turning around,
surprised at this view screen.
Well, but it's a good thing that they did upgrade the cable package, because let's not forget that this comes in very handy later on at the end of the series in The Savage Curtain, when they have to watch Kirk and Abraham Lincoln doing the battle. I mean, you can upgrade the nacelles, you can upgrade the phaser banks and all, but this cable package upgrade to the view screen, they have gotten more use out of that than anything else they've ever done.
They really have. Oh, man. Oh,
it's worth the $99.99 quality that they charge. Oh. Yeah.
And it's awesome. Yeah. Because no matter how far away you are from the action, you never have more than a nanotrisec delay in the signal going back and forth. So. It's always live action, is what I'm saying.
And the cuts are always good. Like, they spent a couple days trying to figure out
Camera angles.
Where to move the camera.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
ESPN,
they had it planned beforehand.
ESPN has nothing on these people. You could put a camera over the field. You can put cameras in people's helmets, whatever you want to do.
Right, yeah. That aerial view is especially nice.
Nothing tops this, so. Okay.
Right. Actually, what does top it is the whole... the escape scene from the prison. We have to mention this, where Kirk kisses Shauna passionately.
Yes.
And then punches her right in the face.
Yeah.
And then steals her little card to get out of his pink cell, no less. It's pink. And then goes into Chekhov's cell, where his tranny selection mate, or whatever they call it, is tied up. Okay?
Yep.
That's a scene I want to see.
And Chekhov says, "This happened. She's all tied up in there. Like, she's bonded." And like, okay, all that's missing is the ball gag. Yeah. I'm repeating myself, I know, but it's true. And he goes in there and Chekhov says, "Well, this kills the romance." And he says it with half regret.
Yeah.
And that's when they start making their escape. Yeah, I really had to mention that.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned
this episode is full of bondage.
Okay,
bondage and whipping and...
and you know, torture.
Refusal
yeah.
is not permitted.
This is.
I kept feeling like they needed a safe word on this planet.
They did.
Dude, this was the ultimate S&M dream. Okay?
Is it?
It had everything. It had the whips. It had the bondage. It had cages. It had shirtless Captain Kirk.
Yes.
It had yelling. It had kissing. Everything but the ball gag.
Yep.
Everything with the ball gag.
I have a feeling.
Can we call every episode with Charlene everything but the ball gag? Because apparently that's the direction we're heading.
Heading? We've already been there. Drew. Where have you been for the last half hour?
It is my goal. I'm going to suggest an episode I'm going to have Charlene on. And it's going to be the least sexual episode of Star Trek ever. Just to give her a challenge, because we're throwing her easy balls. Whatever.
That's true.
The sports ball.
You try me.
It's easy. We're just lobbing it. Easy sports balls.
Dude, you name it, I'll corrupt it.
I do have to admit.
No questions asked. Try me.
Oh yeah, she can do it. I do have to admit, in choosing this week's episode, I basically gave Char the ball on the 1 yard line, and I pulled my defense out of the game. So, I mean.
You really did.
And speaking of football, Char, I'm glad you mentioned this, that I was glad to see that the Triskelions, they basically learned from the Iowa Hawkeyes and they painted the locker rooms pink on this planet. You bring in all the newcomers, you put them in a pink locker room. And
apparently, with their name on it.
Yeah, I did like that their name's in English. The providers.
Yeah.
They knew what they wanted. They wanted Uhura, Chekhov, and Kirk for some reason.
They were prepared.
Apparently.
They were prepared.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to bring it back in and take a serious... And remember to talk about the important issues at play here, like slavery and how wrong, you know, pitting aliens against each other in...
Was that a problem in the 60s?
It's not
going to
work, is it?
Was enslaving alien races and making them fight against each other a big
problem?
For gladiatorial
combat in the 60s? Yes. Was gambling...
Yes, they were.
Was Jell-O Mold's gambling really that big an issue that needed to be touched upon?
Oh, man.
I think we'd move beyond that as a culture by the 1960s.
Okay, so bringing it back around here, as we actually do pass an hour already, believe it or not... This episode did have a serious message. You know, as we talk about trying to find the serious messages in Star Trek, and TOS mostly has them right out there in the open. And the one here pretty much was slavery and, you know, freeing yourself from slavery. But I don't know if it actually made it through everything else in this episode for me. I think you can certainly sit down. You can absolutely sit down and you can write an article about how this episode talks about slavery and freeing yourself. You could do it if you want to, but I have to say that in this episode, it is, for me, what I take away from this is all the campiness, all the glorious cheesiness, the fact that everything that people love about the original series and its production value and its acting and its interactions, it's all here. Mm-hmm. In this episode, and so this is a glorious episode.
This is the episode your mom watched in the 60s, and that's what she thinks of when you say that you're a Star Trek fan. This is that episode.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, for all the seriousness that they get to, Kirk kind of says, okay, you guys are free now. Now, they're really going to be free, right? And Galt's like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like, seriously, like, I'm going to leave now and I'm not going to come back, but you're going to make a whole society. There's going to be voting. You're going to have a woman president, all this stuff, right? Oh yes, absolutely. You just know the next day,
sure.
Galt's going to go in there and talk to the providers. He's like, we're not really going to do that. No, no, we're not doing that.
No, not at all.
That's not going to
happen. He's gone,
Put the obedience college back on the people. Give Lars this tiny dagger and let's get back to work.
That's right. That's exactly what happened too. You know it did.
Yeah.
Once again, we're hurt by the lack of follow-up in TOS episodes.
I mean, if Kirk really cared, he would have, you know, brought a group of people there to build up the society. But no, he told them, seriously, I'm just leaving. Like, I'm done.
I totally won this bet, so
Oh yeah.
Yep.
I'm taking my quat loose and I'm going back to my ship.
I know that your society's been, you know, built on betting for the last, you know, 4 or 5 millennia, but
yeah.
I trust that you'll change it all just because I outsmarted you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave now. You're on your own. I hope you're up to it. I've got another planet I got to go screw up.
Got some other lady I need to kiss, put the moves on.
Exactly. All right, so...
yeah, Kirk's totally moved
any
on.
Any final thoughts on the Gamesters of Triskelion? And are we rating this?
I guess my final thought would be, how can one live in a flicker of light? What is beautiful?
Anyway. And that would you help me again?
That is way too deep for this episode, Greg.
Should we go back to my favorite line, which is, tie her!
There you go. That's more like it.
There we go. This episode was excellent. I mean, as I said at the beginning, this is now one of my favorite episodes. It's got fantastic interaction between Bones and Spock. We've got, I don't know if it's the first time it's done, but we've got Bones saying, you're out of your Vulcan mind! And you've got Spock making little puns. I mean, it's fun. And I think TOS, when it's at its best, is either touching on some deep social issue, which is occasional, or it's being really fun. And when it really succeeds at being fun, like in this episode, I can't do anything but just cheer and have so much fun. I was watching again this afternoon. I'm going to be sticking this one into my Netflix very, very often.
I'm with Greg. Yeah. Basically everything Greg said. I was nervous that Chris was trying to test Greg and I's sports ball skills when he suggested this episode, and then trying to push the limits of Charlene's complete sanity when I realized it was the one with the bondage and the Lady Gaga outfits. But
right,
no, I really enjoyed the episode. I hadn't seen it, and I thought that it was it hit the points that TOS hits. It had a message, but it didn't, you know, dwell on that message forever. It had Kirk making out with the ladies. It had fighting. I mean, the only thing it didn't have was red shirt death, and that really, I don't know, for some reason it disappoints me, and it knocks a couple stars off the whatever kind of scale that we may not be judging it with. I'll give you a warp 6.5. What is that, Ryan?
There we go. That works. I'll give it 40 quatlus.
I think I'll give it 40 quatlus as well.
Right.
It's got everything. What more can I add to what you guys have already said? It's great. All it's missing is the red shirt, and we've got the ultimate S&M fantasy right here. Yeah. What more can I possibly add? It's terrific. It's wonderful, campy, original Star Trek.
It is. This episode is brilliant. I love Gamesters of Triskelion. I know we didn't go into a deep philosophical discussion on today's Ready Room, but hey.
Well, gee, why not?
It's just a really fun episode, and I'm going to give it 7 small daggers. All right. Well, Char and Drew, thanks for joining us today. Before we go, Drew, tell everyone where they can find you, apart from, of course, Trek FM.
They can find me on the Twitters at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. I can spell things. They can also find me in Guild Wars 2 as Landrew.
Oh, you're using
spelled L-A-N-D-R-E-W, which I awesome. Take a little pride in. none of my friends get the joke, though. They're just like, oh, L. Andrew. Oh,
okay. No, that was a designation given to you by Trek FM, right?
Yes, it's my Trek FM name.
Absolutely.
They can email me at landrew005@gmail.com now.
You're just really proud of that name,
nice.
Aren't you?
I am. I'm honored to have been given a new nickname. You know, I felt that I was too old for such things, but apparently I'm not.
So, Drew, just if anyone wants to drop by your house and have a drink with you, what's your address?
Well, my address is... Wait.
1701 Landry Street.
He doesn't know right now.
Yes.
All right. So, Char, tell everyone where they can find you, apart from, of course, Trek FM.
And not where you physically are, apparently.
Well, I'm in the process of moving, so that's a little bit confusing at the moment, because I'm sort of in two different places. And I won't go into specifics, because I don't like stalkers. So... if you want to stalk me on the internet, however, that's more or less okay. I have plenty of people that do that. You can hit me up on the Twitters. Yeah, Greg waves. Stalker! It's okay if you stalk me, Greg. It's just other people that I worry about. thank God for the block button. All right, anyway. Yeah, I'm on the Twitters. I'm over the profanity. And... yeah, the rest of the time, just stalk me on Trek FM because that's where my finest work is at. And now that I am the managing editor, I can do even more cool stuff.
Like fire me.
Yeah.
Wait.
No. No, I'm not firing you. Yay. What are you talking about?
All right.
No. No, I'm making good decisions.
Oh, okay, good.
Fool?
Oh. From now on, starting at this point, good decision.
I had no idea when going into this week and watching the episode that we were going to be doing the ultimate S&M fantasy episode of TOS, but I'm really glad we did pick this one. Man, it was as excellent, of course, and having Charlotte and Drew on to help dirty up the episode is perfect.
Especially Drew, right? Because he was...
yeah, I mean,
man,
Drew really...
He was out of control.
Every time we have that guy on, he's always just ball gag this... fur coat that.
I know, man. Well, what do you expect? I mean, he has those whips on the wall behind him, so.
He does, yes. Whew, that guy. I mean, you know his Twitter persona, but his persona when he gets on this show, it's just wild and crazy.
Wow. That's all I can say. Oh, man. All right. Well, anyway, I think we did pick the perfect episode for this week, so
yeah.
I really enjoyed talking about it, and Greg, speaking of this topic, you had your own little geekgasm the other day, which I think we can't go the whole Ready Room without mentioning.
I ought to mention this. Yes. So, I mean, Will Wheaton, I saw him last Saturday. I mentioned on the show that there he was in all of his glory. And then here he was on Twitter, and he made some joke about... it was a CSI Miami joke that combined with a math joke. And I just had to tweet him, Will Wheaton... I love you. And within about 5 minutes, he tweets, I know, descends into a carbonite freezing chamber.
Right.
And not only that, but he quotes my tweet in
it.
So right. He's got my name and my quote in there. So instantly I get a million at mentions because people are just replying to the tweet.
Right.
The tweet itself gets retweets. It's up to like 120 retweets and like 25 faves.
It's actually better than an at reply because it's...
Oh, yeah.
He's obviously replying to you,
right.
But he's sending it out to everybody at
everyone.
The same time.
Everyone sees it. Because if he'd done just an at reply, I mean, I would have seen it and I would have been, oh, that's awesome. But the fact that it was a public reply,
right.
I just exploded. I started iMessaging everyone I know.
And
I don't think I was really lucid. Like for like 20 minutes, I was just like, oh, my God,
20 minutes? What are you talking about? I mean, at least 20 trisecs. You were just like all over the place. I don't know. I think it was actually the next day before you came down from that, Greg, if I'm
it's
being
very
honest
possible.
Here. But I was sitting here working in the studio, and I have TweetDeck up, and I actually saw Will's message go by, and then I saw Greg Harbin. Because I wasn't staring at Twitter the whole time. I just happened to look over at that screen and there it was.
Yeah.
And I saw it go by and then I saw, Greg Harbin, I love you. And wow, Will is replying to Greg. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was the best reply.
Yeah. And I got a few people that just replied to it because they had seen my tweet and then they saw Will's tweet. So it was an awful lot of fun just to be on Twitter that night. I was watching Doctor Who, and I was watching what's probably the worst episode of TV ever, which is an episode of Doctor Who called Love and Monsters. So to go from that to this Will Wheaton thing, and that happened for like a couple hours, and then to go back to the episode, it was the most juxtaposition that I could imagine, from going like utter hatred of nerddom, like why is I watching this stupid show, to oh my god, this is so cool to be a geek in 2012. So yeah, it absolutely made my week, and I couldn't go the whole show, as you said, without mentioning it.
Of course not. All right. Well, this show is really long. We may even pass our magic number of 2 hours and 7 minutes this week. I'm not sure. But let's tell everyone where they can find us if they want to share their thoughts on the Gamesters of Triskelion, on anything we talked about during news. You can go to trek.fm/contact, and there's a form there. You can send us a message. It'll come to my inbox. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. On Google Plus, amongst all the chirping crickets, at hyperchannel/TrekFMG+. And of course, you can find us on Twitter, where we're talking about Trek all the time, not just Greg and me, but also Drew and Char. We had the full Twitter crew on today's show. You can find us at username TrekFM. And Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
That's right. You can find me on the Twitters at Greg Harbin. That's GREGHAR, B as in boy, IN. We're pretty much during the week, I'm just talking with people and conversing, and then the evenings talking about, I'm now on Doctor Who Season 3 and DS9 Season 4 or 5. I think I'm on 5 now. But then on the weekends, I'm hopefully having another huge nerd adventure. I'm trying to do this every weekend with Sci-Fi Adventure. We're shooting this web series about nerd or geek adventures. So this week was about RPGs. So if you saw me with a Nerf gun and you saw people in zombie makeup, don't worry. I hadn't gone completely crazy. This was an organized event. So if you want to see more pictures like that in the future, please follow me on Twitter and Instagram.
All right. I can't wait to see the pictures. Okay. You can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I'm talking about, of course, Star Trek, but music, college football, Japan, weird things I see around. I'm continuing my quest to visit every coffee shop in Tokyo, and I might even throw some random lyrics at Greg again just to see what he thinks about them, and you can enjoy them too. All right, and while you're online, hop over to the website, trek.fm, take in all of our articles, games, all of our other shows. Trek News and Views with Colin, Hyperchannel with Tristan, Matterstream is coming back up. Of course, you got Deck 8 with Colin and Tom. There's just all kinds of stuff going on all the time. Well, Greg, I'm going to head out. It's perfect timing for me, actually. It's 1 p.m. here in Tokyo. It's the nourishment interval.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to do a mutiny zoom and stick a small dagger in it, because the Ready Room is done.
Okay, what are you referring to? What did I do?
Well, I washed you down a 750 milliliter bottle of Bailey's on this video screen. I'm worried about your judgment.
Yeah, so. And I'm just freaking fine, thank you.
Just wait for that article coming up tomorrow. Why Starfleet ships should have a lot of booze on the bridge all the time.
Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. I'm so drunk. Blah, 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 blah. Done.
Oh, man, we really need to do this show as video.
We do.
No. It half the fun of being a guest on the Ready Room is the video. I have to tell all of you.
It really is.
The little peek behind the scenes.
You miss so much.